Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. It is a wonder drug, and it is a fearsome drug. It relieves, and it enslaves. Wars have been fought over it, and it has set many a user at war with himself or herself. Opium is the source for drugs like OxyContin and Percocet, but it's also the source for their illegal cousin, heroin. The death last week of Philip Seymour Hoffman from an apparent heroin overdose has brought to light a fact that surprises many. Heroin is now the fastest-growing drug of addiction in America. It's a problem all over the country, including right here in the Kansas City metro. And joining us to talk about it today is Molly O'Neill. She's president and CEO of First Call Kansas City. They do alcohol and drug treatment and prevention work. Molly, welcome to the program. We're glad that you're here.
I'm glad to be here. It's great that we have an opportunity to raise awareness about the disease of addiction.
Also joining us is one family who has struggled with heroin addiction and is willing to share their story with us today. By telephone from Portland, Oregon, Anna Kirschenbaum is with us. Anna, good morning.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
We're glad you're here. And also joining us is Anna's mother, who lives here in the Kansas City area, Lena Price. Lena, welcome.
Thank you. Welcome.
We're glad.
Anna.
We'll let the mother and daughter greet one another here. Anna's in Oregon and Lena's here in our studio. I want to actually start with you, Anna and Lena. We'll come to Molly here in a moment to put kind of their story in context. But Anna, thanks so much for being willing to share a little of your story of dealing with heroin addiction. I wonder if you could tell us how it started.
Yeah, I mean, I started experimenting with alcohol and marijuana when I was about 13 years old because I was curious. I had like a need to do it. I had a need to try it. And I took things to a way further level than a lot of the other kids that I grew up with. And when I was like around 15, 16, I was already into prescription pills and cocaine and some other stuff. I in high school, kids were like doing homework and showing up for class. And like, I wasn't doing that. I was so worried about getting high and getting drunk and, I just completely went off on a different path than everyone else around me.
And how did that happen, Anna? I mean, you had many of the same influences around you as those other kids. What sent you in that direction as you see it now?
There were influences on me, but really the worst influence I had was myself. There was just something in me that I wasn't going to stop until I found something that, made me feel so powerful and so good. I don't know. And the first time I did heroin, I was 18. And I just knew that, I was just going to do that forever. I fell in love with it the first time I ever did it. I don't know, it's really hard to explain, but nobody in my family is a drug addict or alcoholic, so for me to be the only one so far, it's difficult, I guess. But there was just something inside me where I was so curious. I wasn't really afraid of anything. I wanted to try a lot of things, and I dealt with a lot of insecurity, and I really hated myself for a really long time, and that was really my problem. And I was going to find something that was going to make me feel better. And for me, that was heroin. It became my drug of choice, and I absolutely fell in love with it the first time I ever did it.
I want to ask you more about that experience, but I also want to ask your mother, who is sitting here listening to you. Lena, it must be difficult to hear your daughter talk about those events of her childhood.
Well, actually, it still is difficult every time I do hear it. I remember the first time I heard or someone said to me, your daughter is a drug addict, and I couldn't believe it because we grew up in Leawood. My kids went to private school. I have four kids, and they all had everything that they could possibly want. And my daughter a drug addict? No. I think you'd find that somewhere else in Kansas City, but not in Leawood, not in my home.
So then what did you attribute this to? I mean, did you blame yourself? Did you blame others?
I blamed myself for a long time. Mm-hmm. I blamed my daughter for not being strong enough, and I was angry because I was completely uneducated, and I wanted answers. But I was upset with myself. I thought somewhere I was flawed as her mother.
I want to come back to you, Lena, and to you, Anna, for more of your story and just sort of how this happened here in the Kansas City metro area. But first, let me turn to Molly O'Neill. You work with a lot of families at First Call Kansas City.
We do.
How did heroin come to be such a fast-growing drug of choice in this area and maybe around the whole country?
You know, it's kind of had a resurgence. As you know, it was very popular in the 60s and 70s. But it's not I think it comes a little bit to us from the other opioid use when OxyContin and oxycodone and prescription painkillers have become very available and very popular, but also are very expensive. And heroin is sort of a natural next step from some of those other drugs of choice. And it's, you know, I also think that there's a reduction in a fear among youth around some of these drugs. They don't see the risk that we used to we had instilled in them for a while. And so I think that we need to begin to help them understand again what the risks are. And the risk of addiction is so great and so high, and the consequences of that are just tragic, obviously.
Well, let's get those consequences on the table. I mean, the risk of heroin use is, well, we saw it with Philip Seymour Hoffman last week.
Right. And certainly, you know, it acts on the respiratory system, and most often an overdose will or use will cause a depression in respiratory system, and then you basically stop breathing, and that's why you die. But there's also heroin's cut with other toxic chemicals, and so that those chemicals also act on other systems in the body and can create lots of problems for the liver, lots of problems for the heart, lots of problems just organically throughout your body, and certainly your brain. You know, it's suppression of your ability to think and cognition and even, you know, breathing is pretty important for being able to think. So,
well, and you mentioned that we're not communicating the risks to young people maybe as well as we once did. Are young people the largest growing segment of users? What is the typical heroin user, if we can put it that way?
You know, I think it's probably, you know, the fast growing nature of teens and youth is the most terrifying for us. And so it gets the biggest spotlight. I think it's actually faster growing among 20-somethings. But the, you know, they don't start with heroin. Nobody starts with heroin. And I think that's really important. Anna's story is very real, very pretty darn typical, with maybe the exception that you usually find a family history of some other kind of addictive illness. So other than that, you know, addictive disease follows the trajectory that Anna described. And you're not you don't see a kid saying, oh, gee, I think I've decided I'll become a heroin addict because it looks really appealing to me.
And how is becoming addicted to opiates or to heroin different from, say, an alcohol addiction or even something like smoking? I mean, why is heroin so much more serious?
You know, I'm not sure that I would characterize it precisely like that. I think they're both extraordinarily serious. And I think that alcohol overdose can also lead to death, and tobacco use leads to death. And the use of any mood-altering chemicals or brain-altering chemicals is what I really want to say, by youth especially, is impacting how they develop, because they're not fully developing their brain until they're at least in their mid-20s or later 20s. So that's really impacting how they're going to function for the rest of their lives.
Sounds like it's a lot harder to quit heroin addiction than it is to stop smoking, for example.
You know, I'm not sure that that's actually accurate. One of the things that I'm aware of, familiar with, is that tobacco addiction, frankly, is one of the most highly – tobacco is one of the most – nicotine, one of the most highly addictive substances there is, and right up there with heroin. So, you know, I'm not sure that we want to – I don't think that I necessarily really want to make comparisons and say, oh, this is way worse, so maybe you should just smoke cigarettes or maybe you should just smoke weed, you know, as opposed to doing heroin. I certainly do think that harm reduction is important. I don't want to say you should use heroin, but I what I do want to say is that there's an illness here.
Yeah, and of course, Anna, you've told us that alcohol and marijuana preceded your use of heroin and these other drugs. I guess I'm curious, you hear the talk here from Molly about the risks, the effect on your body, and of course we all know the risk of death. Did those risks enter your mind as you were using heroin?
No. No. I didn't care.
But you didn't care.
What?
You may have known, but you didn't care.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew that I didn't care.
Yeah. I wonder, Anna, do you feel like the heroin was too accessible to you? I mean, one of the things we've heard is that heroin is cheaper than the prescription drugs that some people are addicted to that are related, like oxycodone. You said you lived in Leawood. Where did you even find heroin? You don't have to be specific, but I mean, in general, this is not a how-to guide, but where did you find it? I mean, how accessible was it to you?
There's places in Kansas City, close to downtown, and actually Olathe, there was a lot of stuff. That's where I got that, but
I had a 12-year-old in the office a few months ago who was saying that she knew where she could get drugs anytime she wanted them. She was in our office because she was participating in our family programming to deal with the impact of addiction on her, of a family member on her. But, you know, this is a startling thing to hear and understand, is that young people, they're networked, they're connected, mm-hmm. and if they want it, they can find it.
Lena, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the impact on your family of all of this. I mean, so here was Anna. She was 17, 8 years old. She's 18 years old. She's addicted to heroin. How did that affect her? How did that affect you? How did it affect the rest of your kids?
Well, it impacted my family quite a bit. When she was 17, I had her sent away. I actually had her kidnapped and sent away to her first sort of rehab treatment center, which within 6 weeks she had gotten herself kicked out of. And from there, I think she went to about 8 different rehab, detox, treatment centers. But leading up to the time that she was sent away, I became pretty much obsessed with her behavior and trying to figure out what she was doing, how I can control her behavior, how I can control her life. And because of that, I have 4 kids, by the way. Mm-hmm. So because of that, the 2 younger ones pretty much got lost in the shuffle. I have an older son who was away at college. But also during that time, Anna's father and I got divorced. So that was also very stressful on the family. When Anna left, it was very confusing for my 2 other daughters. It was very difficult for me to talk about without crying, without breaking down. And whenever she had gotten kicked out of a particular program, I melted down. I would have these panic attacks. And that affected my other kids.
I'm sure. I wonder, Molly, as you listen to this story, you mentioned that Anna's story is sadly enough not atypical. Is this typical of the impact on families as
No,
well?
Absolutely. It absolutely is. You know, which is why I'm so grateful that Lena and Anna are willing to come on and talk about it, because this is, you know, it's such an isolating illness. Addictive disease, substance use disorders are entirely isolating. And so having family members talk about it, there's probably, many, 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 many people out there saying, oh, my God, that's what I've been going through. Because that is typical. We have programs at First Call, How to Cope, that and Caring for Kids, that are specifically designed to help family members deal with the impact of substance use disorders when they have a loved one who has addictive disease. And because it's a family illness, it impacts everyone in really severe ways.
You know, I want to ask you about sort of this Kansas City specific nature of this problem. At least it's not mm-hmm. limited to Kansas City, but it does seem to be very much on the rise here. The Kansas City Star reported last week that the Kansas City area had 14 – Kansas City, Missouri had 14 deaths from heroin overdose last year. There was actually another one just a couple weeks ago in the Waldo neighborhood. In Missouri, there were 46 accidental heroin deaths in 2007. There were 187 accidental heroin deaths in 2013. Kansas, they don't break it down by specific drugs, but the number of narcotic deaths was 109 in 2012. That's up 25% from just the year before. What's going on?
Mm-hmm. And those are the ones just reported.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks,
Lena.
And
those are deaths due to an actual overdose. You're not hearing about the deaths from other illnesses that are caused by the use of chemicals. So you are not hearing about the alcoholism deaths, et cetera, et cetera. It's really important to understand that there are nearly 3 million deaths a year nationally from addictive disease. This is an illness that we have to begin to talk about as an illness, as a disease, and find solutions for. But in Kansas City, it started really in Missouri in a big way in St. Louis. Kansas City sits on the I-70, corridor, and there seems to be a strong access from both coasts and or all 4 coasts when you get I-35 in there. For drugs coming across the country. And so, access and accessibility and denial, I think, are a couple of pieces that contribute to the increase in drug use and overdose in Kansas City.
That's interesting. 816-235-2888 is the number to call if you have questions for our guest today about heroin and opiate use in Kansas City. I want to go back to Anna Kirschenbaum. She's joining us from Portland, Oregon, and has been willing to talk about her own story. Anna, I understand that you actually overdosed at one point. What happened, and how come that wasn't enough for you to quit?
I've OD'd a couple times. Most of the times actually were not on opiates. And I ended up like coming out of it. Like it wasn't as bad. It wasn't, I didn't go to the hospital or anything, but I, when I was younger, I got alcohol poisoning and was rushed to the hospital. And I think that like that was probably the scariest for me when I was 16 and I woke up and I was in the hospital and people were putting, you know, stuff in my arms. And so, and I was also younger. I was 16 and I wasn't doing, you know, heroin at that point yet. But that was probably like the scariest for me. And then I remember my parents walking in and seeing me, and I got in trouble, and I got in trouble a lot when I was younger, but it just never really, like, stopped me from doing what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I was a really big pain, and, like...
Your mother is smiling with a knowing look as you say that. and let me ask you this, Anna. How old are you now, if you don't mind my asking?
22.
And you now are no longer using heroin, right?
Yes, I'm no longer using anything.
And how did you eventually quit? And, of course, we recognize that just because you're not using now doesn't mean there's not still an addiction. But how long have you been clean, and what helped you to be clean?
I've been clean and sober since May of 2012. So I went to a lot of treatment facilities. I went to pretty much all type of rehabs. And the biggest thing is, like, I didn't really think that I had a problem. Like, I really didn't think I had a problem. I really didn't understand what I was doing. I didn't think that I was doing anything wrong. I didn't think I was hurting anyone except myself. And I just wasn't done, like, you know, getting high and living my life like that. I thought that when I wanted to stop and grow up and, like, be an adult, I would be able to do that. And when I got to the point where I wanted to do that, I could not stop getting high. It was impossible for me to stop when I actually wanted to stop. And that was really scary. And that's when I started to understand, oh my God, I think this is a problem now.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I want to make sure before the end of the hour I give Molly a chance to talk a little bit about the treatment that is available, the help that is available for people who may be in a situation similar to you, Anna. So I'll come back if I can. But Molly, what are the opportunities that are available here in the Kansas City area to help those who might be struggling with addiction?
There's First Call, of course, and we're available both to serve people by phone and online. We've got the ability for folks to get online and access help at mobileccl.org. But also, you know, what we will do is help folks figure out what kind of help they need. There are a variety of resources that can help people. We don't necessarily espouse any one specific modality of service, except that we really want to focus on the most successful and understanding that this is an illness and it needs to be treated as such. There are 12-step programs. There are treatment providers that really focus and base their programs on 12-step recovery, which is great. There are medical model treatment centers that methadone clinics that can help people to taper off. There are new medications that are being tested and retested, and we have a long way to go with them. But I think it's critical that we're using science to begin to work on recovery. So Suboxone, Naltrexone, some of those that help block the receptors that would be heroin receptors.
And Lena, in about 10 seconds or so, I mean, has your family come to a better place? Do you feel like you're headed the right way now?
Oh, absolutely. We are on a good path. And I will say very quickly that Anna got clean and sober through an intensive inpatient 12-step program, and that saved her life.
Anna Kirschenbaum, Lena Price, Anna's mother, I can't thank you enough for sharing your story with us this morning. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And also Molly O'Neill, President and CEO of First Call Kansas City. Thanks so much for being here.
You're welcome. I hope we've helped.
I hope so, too. I believe you have. You can find out more about the issue. You can subscribe to our podcast. You can hear the conversation again or any previous show by going to the Central Standard page at kcur.org. We'll also put the numbers up there about that from First Call Kansas City that Molly shared earlier this morning. Central Standard will be back tomorrow. Stay tuned now for Up to Date. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. I'm Brian Ellison. This is KCUR.